Chapter 14. The sharp aches in my head, or what I later came to know as migraines, stopped as my daily activities were replaced with more soldierly things. In the daytime, instead of playing soccer in the village square, I took turns at garden posts around the village, smoking marijuana and sniffing brown, cocaine mixed with gunpowder, which was always spread out on the table, and of course taking more of the white capsules, as I had become addicted to them. They gave me a lot of energy. The first time I took all these drugs at the same time, I began to perspire so much that I took off all my clothes. My body shook, my sight became blurred, and I lost my hearing for several minutes. I walked around the village aimlessly as I felt restless because I simultaneously felt a tremendous rush of energy and numbness. But after several doses of these drugs, all I felt was numbness to everything and so much energy that I couldn't sleep for weeks. We watched movies at night, war movies, Rambo First Blood, Rambo 2, Commando, and so on, with the aid of a generator or sometimes a car battery. We all wanted to be like Rambo. We couldn't wait to implement his techniques. When we ran out of food, drugs, ammunition, and gasoline to watch war films, we raided rebel camps in towns, villages, and forests. We also attacked civilian villages to capture recruits and whatever else we could find. We have good news from our informants. We are moving out in 5 minutes to kill some rebels and take their supplies, which really belong to us, the lieutenant would announce. His face evinced confidence. His smiles disappeared before they were completed. We tied our heads with the green cloths that distinguish us from the rebels, and we boys led the way. There were no maps and no questions asked. We were simply told to follow the path until we received instruction on what to do next. We walked for long hours and stopped only to eat sardines and corned beef with gari, sniff cocaine, brown, and take some white capsules. The combination of these drugs gave us a lot of energy and made us fierce. The idea of death didn't cross my mind at all, and killing had become as easy as drinking water. My mind had not only snapped during the first killing, it had also stopped making remorseful records, or so it seemed. After we ate and did drugs, we would guard the perimeter while the adults rested for a bit. I shared a post with Alhaji, and we would time each other on how fast we could take out a magazine and replace it. "Sometime I am going to take on a whole village by myself, just like Rambo," Alhaji told me, smiling at the new goal he had set for himself. "I'd like to have some bazookas of my own, like the ones in Commando. That would be beautiful," I said, and we laughed. Before we got to a rebel camp, we would deviate from the path and walk inside the forest. Once the camp was in sight, we would surround it and wait for the lieutenant's command. The rebels roamed about. Some sat against walls, dozing off, and others, boys as young as we, stood at guard posts, passing around marijuana. Whenever I looked at rebels during raids, I got angrier because they looked like the rebels who played cards in the ruins of the village where I had lost my family. So when the lieutenant gave orders, I shot as many as I could, but I didn't feel better. After every gunfight, we would enter the rebel camp, killing those we had wounded. We would then search the houses and gather gallons of gasoline, enormous amounts of marijuana and cocaine, bales of clothes, crepes, watches, rice, dried fish, salt, gari, and many other things. We rounded up the civilians, men, women, boys, and young girls, hiding in the huts and houses, and made them carry our loot back to the base. On one of these raids, we had captured a few rebels after a long gunfight and a lot of civilian casualties. We undressed the prisoners and tied them until their chests were tight as drums. "Where did you get all this ammunition from?" the corporal asked one of the prisoners, a man with an almost dreadlocked beard. He spat at the corporal's face, and the corporal immediately shot him in the head at close range. He fell onto the ground and blood slowly leaked out of his head. We cheered in admiration of the corporal's fierceness and saluted him as he walked by. Suddenly, Lansana, one of the boys, was shot in the chest and head by a rebel hiding in the bushes. We dispersed around the village in search of the shooter. When the young muscular rebel was captured, the lieutenant slit his neck with his bayonet. The rebel ran up and down the village before he fell to the ground and stopped moving. We cheered again, raising our guns in the air, shouting and whistling. "If anyone starts any funny business, shoot him." The lieutenant eyed the prisoners. We set the thatch roofs on fire and left, taking the prisoners with us. The flames on the thatch roofs waved us off as they danced with the afternoon breeze, swaying as if in agony. "We," the lieutenant pointed to us, "are here to protect you and will do all we can to make sure nothing happens to you," he pointed to the civilians. "Our job is a serious one, and we have the most capable soldiers who will do anything to defend this country. We are not like the rebels, those riffraffs who kill people for no reason. We kill them for the good and betterment of this country. So respect all these men," he pointed to us again, "for offering their services." The lieutenant went on and on with his speech, which was a combination of instilling in the civilians that we were doing what was right and boosting the morale of his men, including us, the boys. I stood there holding my gun and felt special because I was part of something that took me seriously and I was not running from anyone anymore. I had my gun now, and as the corporal always said, "This gun is your source of power in these times. It will protect you and provide you all you need if you know how to use it well." I cannot remember what prompted the lieutenant to make this speech. A lot of things were done with no reason or explanation. Sometimes we were asked to leave for a war in the middle of a movie. We would come back hours later after killing many people and continue the movie as if we had just returned from intermission. We were always either at the front lines, watching a war movie or doing drugs. There was no time to be alone or to think. When we conversed with each other, we talked only about the war movies or how impressed we were with the way either the lieutenant, the corporal, or one of us had killed someone. It was as if nothing else existed outside our reality. The morning after the lieutenant's speech, we proceeded to practice killing the prisoners the way the lieutenant had done it. There were 5 prisoners and many eager participants, so the corporal chose a few of us. He picked Kene, 3 other boys, and me for the killing exhibition. The 5 men were lined up in front of us on the training ground with their hands tied. We were supposed to slice their throats on the corporal's command. The person whose prisoner died quickest would win the contest. We had our bayonets out and were supposed to look in the faces of the prisoners as we took them out of this world. I had already begun staring at my prisoner. His face was swollen from the beating he had received, and his eyes looked as if they were watching something behind me. His jaws were the only tense part of his facial expression. Everything else seemed calm. I didn't feel a thing for him, didn't think that much about what I was doing. I just waited for the corporal's order. The prisoner was simply another rebel who was responsible for the death of my family, as I had come to truly believe. The corporal gave the signal with a pistol shot, and I grabbed the man's head and slit his throat in one fluid motion. His Adam's apple made way for the sharp knife, and I turned the bayonet on its zigzag edge as I brought it out. His eyes rolled up and they looked me straight in the eye before they suddenly stopped in a frightful glance, as if caught by surprise. The prisoner leaned his weight on me as he gave out his last breath. I dropped him on the ground and wiped my bayonet on him. I reported to the corporal, who was holding a timer. The bodies of the other prisoners fought in the arms of the other boys, and some continued to shake on the ground for a while. I was proclaimed the winner, and Kene came second. The boys and the other soldiers who were the audience clapped as if I had just fulfilled one of life's greatest achievements. I was given the rank of junior lieutenant, and Kene was given junior sergeant. We celebrated that day's achievement with more drugs and more war movies. I had a tent to myself, which I never slept in because sleep never came to me. Sometimes late in the night, the quiet wind brought to my ears the humming of Lansana. It seemed as if the trees whispered the tunes of the songs he had sung. I would listen for a bit and then fire a few rounds into the night, driving the humming away.